Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media radio show tonight. I just wanted to give a big shout out to Madonna. Boy, that song brings back some memories. That's burning up off of her first album, and she's actually going to have a birthday this week. So I want to also talk about our sponsors that make it possible for us to be here every week. Daughters of Isis, the Common Projects Network, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, that gives us our hour to an hour and a half broadcast every week, gives us the space on the air. Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo Blog. You can find us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. When you go there, you can get links to all the archived shows. Also, don't forget to contribute. So turn those pockets inside out. No amount is too small. We do not take corporate funding, so any little bit that you can help to help keep us on the air is gratefully appreciated. Our phone number for call-ins is 213-816-0357. This forum is open to whoever would like to call in about whatever topic you want to talk about. We also have Josh in the chat room. Hi, Josh. So if you want to join us in the chat room and you can't see the chat room and you are on Blog Talk Radio, just refresh your screen and it should pop in. But it is live and ready for you to comment or call in. But in any case, we have a huge news week, just like we did last week. The Dream Defenders are still holding their own up at the Florida State Capitol. They're starting to get a lot of media coverage. The latest guest that they had that actually came down to visit them and spend the night with them in the Capitol building was Talib Kweli. He's an artist, a music artist. He did a great little write-up on the blog. Actually, I'll provide the link under our blog post on Blogspot, on wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. It was on his Tumblr blog. It said, "Turn down for what? Turn up for the Dream Defenders." And he writes, I'm just going to read a little bit of it. "I write this as I sit in the Florida office of Governor Rick Scott live from the Capitol. It's 4 a.m. and I'm writing to the sound of a sleeping giant. I decided to spend the night here with the Dream Defenders, a student-based activist group that organized around the George Zimmerman trial and is pushing to change Florida's legislation to reflect racial profiling and have an impact on the school-to-prison pipeline. Today," this was dated today, by the way, he says, "today is day 25. They've spent every night here for the last months." The next paragraph, he has a YouTube video link to one of those here, but the next paragraph, "When I first heard Philip Agnew from the Dream Defenders speak about his organization, I was drawn in by the way he looked and spoke, standing there at the podium with his snapback and tattoos explaining why the Dream Defenders were occupying the Capitol until their demands are met. He looked like someone who would give me dap at one of my concerts. He was my peer, not an elder or an authority figure. While the rest of the world was retrying Zimmerman in their own head and trying to figure out the best way to express outrage over something that already happened, the Dream Defenders were being proactive about the future. When Philip Agnew said, 'We are not demonstrators, we are not protesters, we are not trying to change the verdict of the Zimmerman trial, we are only interested in moving forward,' I was all in." So you can read the rest of that wonderful piece of writing by Talib Kweli on the blog post for tonight's show. Actually, I'm posting it right now under the comments section. And it's his Tumblr. It's Talib Kweli's personal Tumblr blog. I want to make sure you all can check it out. Very nicely done piece of writing. So let me go on to another bit of news, which has affected a lot of people in Miami, the tasering death of a young man, 17 years old. Actually, some reports said he was 17. Some said he was 18. He was tagging a building. He was an aspiring artist. Apparently had already been internationally recognized for his art, definitely pretty much part of the art scene in Miami. But as he was tagging the building, the police came after him. He ran. He stopped. One of them tasered him to the heart, and he went into, I guess, cardiac arrest, fell on the ground, was taken to the hospital, and pronounced dead on the scene. So my question is, how long are people in Florida going to allow this murder, the continuing systemic murder of our young people on our streets, without rising up and saying something about it? This was a boy that didn't have a record. he did not have a violent nature. He was totally caught up in his art and the whole scene down there in Miami. And the cops are allowed to taser, and the taser is considered a non-lethal weapon. Well, too often it's not. I'm going to go ahead and play the audio for the news report that came out of Miami. I believe it was yesterday. Let me double check. It looks like it came, it was written up today, but I believe the audio and video on this report was from yesterday. So stay tuned for that. One moment.
By police and died is demanding answers tonight. CBS4's Maggie Nolan is live on Miami Beach and reports we are learning more about the officer who pulled the trigger. Maggie?
We are in Cynthia. This case is charged with emotion tonight. Groups of people at times were yelling at the police, but right now the overwhelming emotion is just sadness. If you take a look at this memorial earlier tonight, large groups of family and friends gather here to pray.
Thank you. His life will not be for nothing, but for a change in the world.
Overwhelmed with grief, family and friends gather to remember Israel Hernandez. The promising young artist died Tuesday morning after Miami Beach police used a taser on him. Police say the teen was tagging this vacant storefront and ran when officers approached. After a short chase, police say Hernandez, who was face-to-face with officers, ignored commands to stop. That's when Officer Jorge Mercado deployed his taser. By the time he got to the hospital, Israel Hernandez was dead. Our news partners at El Nuevo Herald exclusively obtained documents from Officer Jorge Mercado's internal affairs file. They show numerous allegations and cases dating back to 2007, including battery, excessive use of force, theft, drug testing procedures, court overtime attendance and accountability, and professional courtesy conduct and respect. Of all the cases, he faced disciplinary action for two. Documents show Mercado was suspended for 160 hours in connection with the drug testing allegations. He also received a verbal conference regarding the court-related case. The other allegations were unsubstantiated or withdrawn. But what happened in this case involving Israel Hernandez is still unclear. Police say the officer who wrote the incident report didn't see Mercado deploy his taser. So for now, there are just questions and grief for a life lost and all the promise that came with it.
In the 20 years I've been teaching art, Israel was one of the most uniquely talented artist I'd ever encountered.
His art is amazing. He would have been great. I know it in my heart. He was going to be an amazing artist.
The art community in general in Miami has lost a real talent. He'll be sorely missed.
And tonight the family is calling for an independent investigation, and a Miami Beach commissioner tweeted that there will be a complete investigation involving multiple independent agencies. For Live on Miami Beach, Maggie Newland, CBS 4 News Tonight.
So that is the story of Israel Hernandez, the artist out of Miami. And it's just at this point, it's extremely sad that that this continued murder of our young people on the streets is happening, and the police are getting away with it with absolutely no accountability and a slap on the wrist if there is any kind of punitive punishment meted out. The other big news story was Yemen continuing their drone strikes. We are continuing the drone strikes in Yemen. The latest reports have missile-armed drone aircraft launching the fifth attack on suspected al-Qaeda militants in Yemen in 72 hours yesterday, as the U.S. stepped up raids after closing its embassy and warning Americans to leave the country. The latest strike killed three people in a vehicle in the Gail Bawezer region, according to the Al Sawa website of the opposition Islamist Islah Party. The group is linked to the Muslim Brotherhood. At least 22 suspected militants have been killed since August 6th, according to reports on the website. The attacks occurred as the U.S., Britain and other Western countries closed their missions in Yemen and told citizens to leave, while Yemeni authorities said August 7th that they had foiled a plot by al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP, to seize port facilities in Mukalla on the Gulf of Aden. So So these continued attacks by the U.S. government on Yemen are probably some of the big reasons as to why we removed our embassy people throughout the Arab world and put them in safe in safe places or brought them home. But in any case, since the American government terms any person they want as a combatant, even if these drones strike civilians, they can simply say, oh, well, they were combatants, and justify the death of innocent people as far as what these drones are actually striking at. So with that, I'll go ahead and move on to our next song, which was definitely a favorite of mine. And I remember long, long times dancing to this song over in Europe, and they would mix it so it lasted over an hour. They would just keep mixing the long EP versions of it. And, of course, it fits the whole idea of being in the heat in August in Florida. This is Hot, Hot, Hot by The Cure.
Thank you.
A little double header there, the Hot, Hot, Hot by The Cure and The Power Station with Robert Palmer doing Some Like It Hot. Both of those hits came out in the 1980s. Still a fan of the 1980s music. Some other news has been crossing my desk over the past couple hours. Of course, some of the big news is coming out of Florida again. When you go to these articles in Time magazine, I find it quite interesting that they put anything coming in, any kind of news coming in out of Florida under a heading of swampland. The article that's there now is why the next Florida voter purge will be different from the last. After a failed attempt at clearing the voting roll of non-citizens in 2012, can Florida present evidence that this is a problem before the 2014 election? Without the threat of immediate Department of Justice backlash, Florida officials are set to revisit the removal of non-citizens from voter rolls before the 2014 election. Although previous purge efforts have been thwarted, this time it might just work. State officials in 2012 claimed to have a list of 182,000 voters who were ineligible to vote because of their citizenship status, yet still appeared on voter rolls. After further investigation, the list dwindled to a mere 198 across Florida. At the time, the state compared lists from the Department of Motor Vehicles that named licensed drivers who weren't U.S. citizens to lists of people registered to vote. Florida, like many states, permits illegal immigrants to obtain driver's licenses. Now the State Department says it will develop procedures based on information gathered through a federal citizenship database known as the Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements Program, or SAVE, a real mouthful, a process perceived to be more accurate. Quote, we are now able to assess and further develop appropriate procedures before implementing responsible measures that ensure due process and the integrity of Florida's voter rolls, says Maria Matthews, director of the state's elections, in an email to election supervisors last Friday. So you will probably, this is a rather long article that was just kind of like the header on it, And you will no doubt hear more about the next voter purge coming up, because it looks like anybody who happens to be governor of Florida tends to take this on, and it becomes quite a mess. One of the things that kind of, to turn it into another topic, one of the things that kind of amazed me during my drive up to Tallahassee with my friend Maria to visit the Dream Defenders on July 26th was how so many of the little towns going up Route 19 from the Tampa Bay area all the way up into Tallahassee are closed, non-existent, buildings boarded up, houses vacated. It was a situation where if you saw a gas station and you thought you needed to tank up, it probably was a good idea, because you didn't know, we didn't know if we were going to hit a gas station after going 60, 70, 80 miles. We didn't know where the next one was coming. So nothing can be more dramatic as far as falling apart than the city of Detroit. It happens to be the city where I was born. There were 25 facts about the fall of Detroit that will leave you shaking your head. This was an article that came out that circulated on the internet. And Detroit definitely came first in this house of cards or domino effect, if you want to call it that. It looks like, you know, we're going to be getting more of the same in a lot of our urban areas. It's just Detroit was hit first because of the huge industrial jobs and the car-making factories and the unions and everything that keeps a city alive, jobs and money and business and small business and neighborhoods. This has all pretty much crumbled in Detroit. Detroit's resurrecting again, but in a different form, learning how to take their gray spaces of crumbled architecture and parking lots and build community gardens. And they're learning how to rise above it all. But their dramatic fall economically, it's really been quite dire for a lot of the people that are living there. But there is good arising up out of the ashes. I wanted to read these 25 points because I thought it was really important. And if Detroit is the model of this kind of economic downturn, then we can expect, like I said before, we can expect this in other cities, but just happening at different times. So I'll go ahead and start with point one. At this point, the city of Detroit owes money to more than 100,000 creditors. Detroit is facing $20 billion in debt and unfunded liabilities. That breaks down to more than $25,000 per resident. Back in 1960, the city of Detroit actually had the highest per capita income in the entire nation. In 1950, there were about 296,000 manufacturing jobs in Detroit. Today, there are less than 27,000. Between December 2000 and December 2010, 48% of the manufacturing jobs in the state of Michigan were lost. There are lots of houses available for sale in Detroit right now for $500 or less. At this point, there are approximately 78,000 abandoned homes in the city. About one-third of Detroit's 140 square miles is either vacant or derelict. An astounding 47% of the residents of the city of Detroit are functionally illiterate. Less than half of the residents of Detroit over the age of 16 are working at this point. If you can believe it, 60% of all children in the city of Detroit are living in poverty. So that's more than half. Detroit was once the fourth largest city in the United States, but over the past 60 years, the population of Detroit has fallen by 63%. The city of Detroit is now very heavily dependent on the tax revenue it pulls in from the casinos in the city. Right now, Detroit is bringing in about $11 million a month in tax revenue from the casinos. There are 70 Superfund hazardous
waste sites in Detroit. So that's saying that a lot of the areas in Detroit are not even, and they're not even habitable anymore. They're toxic dumps. 40% of the streetlights do not work. About a third of the ambulances are running. Some ambulances in the city of Detroit have been used for so long that they have more than 250,000 miles on them. Two-thirds of the parks in the city of Detroit have been permanently closed down since 2008. The size of the police force in Detroit has been cut by only, or by about 40% over the past decade. When you call the police in Detroit, it takes them an average of 58 minutes to respond. Due to budget cutbacks, most police stations in Detroit are now closed to the public for 16 hours a day. The violent crime rate in Detroit is 5 times higher than the national average. The murder rate in Detroit is 11 times higher than it is in New York City. Today, police solve less than 10% of the crimes that are committed in Detroit. And crime has gotten so bad in Detroit that even the police are telling people to enter Detroit at your own risk. It is easy to point fingers and mock Detroit, but the truth is that the rest of America is going down the exact same path that Detroit has gone down. Detroit just got there first. All over the country, there are hundreds of state and local governments that are also on the verge of financial ruin. So this was an article that came out on the Economic Collapse blog. Very, very interesting. You can look it up. 25 facts about the fall of Detroit that will leave you shaking your head. And it looks like this is the economic downturn in an urban. This is what happens in the urban areas. I really hope everybody reads that article, the full article. Let me go to a song now. This was another one by Madonna, the birthday girl, also from Detroit, mind you. So I call her my home girl. This is a song called Fever.
Put your arms around me.
So that was Madonna with her version of the song, Peggy Lee's song, Fever. So let's put a little bit of that fire out and talk about Florida's water. I think this is a really important article. I've been getting these articles for some time emailed to me. I would rather not say who's sending them to me, but I thought this was a rather interesting one about how you can have the appearance of having too much water but really not have enough. And if the water is not managed properly, it can really cause a lot of havoc. So the title of this is Lake Okeechobee, Scott's Waterloo. So, seems our highest-ranking elected official in Florida is about to get a real-world snootful of what it really takes to get Florida's water right. For the last 2 years, his minions, Herschel Vineyard and Jeff Littlejohn, have been mindlessly going about decimating the state's water resource management capabilities, particularly at the South Florida Water Management District. Meanwhile, Scott, with no idea what he or they are doing, is about to learn that getting the state's water right is a whole lot more than having DEP spew endless news releases that shamelessly give him credit for things he didn't do or that don't amount to much. At a meeting of the Water Resource Advisory Commission of the South Florida Water Management District held in Jensen Beach yesterday, it was reported that despite the fact that the Corps is releasing water from the lake as fast as possible, water can actually flow into it 6 times faster than it can be released. Right now, the lake is as high as it has been in 8 years, and the rainy season is just getting underway, not to mention the hurricane season. Most of us on this side of the state don't pay much attention to the Lake Okeechobee problem, but we should because it reflects the state's growing incompetence at protecting the public's health, safety, and welfare, as well as its natural systems. Used to be water management in Florida was science-based. Now it's who you know, not what you know, and lives are at risk. Improperly managed water can be dangerous, vast ecosystems can be destroyed, and human lives lost. The situation down south is demonstrating this in spades. Because the lake is so high and the rains keep coming, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, as one would expect, is pulling all the stops and discharging all it can before the lake's aged culverts and the 143-mile weakened levee fail, an urgent and real concern. Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Greco of the COE said the dike at the southern end of Lake Okeechobee is among the most at risk in the United States and needs immediate attention, according to Palm Beach Post reporter Christine Stapleton, who reported that at the meeting. Major Philip Rowland of the city of Clewiston expressed concern that this could be the other Katrina. Clewiston lies just outside the lake's levee. The article by the Palm Beach Post reporter Christine Stapleton, I'm going to go ahead and post at the bottom of the blog also so people can look directly at that article. The rest of the article states, the Corps' massive freshwater releases are causing major destruction to coastal natural systems, which are salt or brackish water dependent. In addition, the water is loaded with nutrients and pesticides from the multitude of farms adjacent to the lake. Slime and algae blooms are becoming commonplace, and the Indian River Lagoon may be facing total ecosystem failure. Despite the hyperbole of the Internet, this is one matter you should consider carefully and be legitimately concerned with, because it is much more than just Southeast Florida. Think about our own rivers, lakes, springs, coastal marshes, and freshwater aquifers. Melissa Meeker is the most recent political appointee to the South Florida Water Management District to flee back to the private sector before, as one anonymous writer put it, her incompetence at handling one of the most complex water resource management challenges in the country was found out. Now Tallahassee has replaced her with another political appointee, Blake Guillory, who brings no apparent better management capabilities or insights. This may very well be Scott's re-election Waterloo. As much as it may seem irresponsible to suggest a water management disaster as frightening as this might be the price the state will have to pay to rid itself of his incompetence
and return to the truly responsible resource management Florida urgently requires and once had before he dismantled it. Very, very important article. I am going to be, this actually comes to me from a blog, so if I can post that link, I will post that link, and I will post the link to the article by the Palm Beach reporter Christine Stapleton at the bottom of our blog post on Wise Women Media. Next song, I'm hoping that you all are liking the heat, hot, fever kind of theme with all of this music, but this is Foreigner, Hot-Blooded.
Thank you.
So that was a live performance of Foreigner doing Hot Blooded, great song. Actually, that wasn't recorded too long ago. So they're kind of like aged rockers now, but they still jammed pretty good. As far as I'm concerned, they were pretty good. Upcoming events, we're going down towards the last 10 minutes of the show. One of the most important events that's been happening for quite some time, I encourage anybody listening that's living in Florida to enter into the fight to stop fracking in the state of Florida and don't even give the oil companies a foothold over our lands and waters and mineral rights. Nowhere is the fight even huger at this point in time than Naples, Florida, and that whole area down there. They have a website called preserveourparadise.org where you can see exactly what's been going on over the past several months. They are mobilized. They're definitely turning up the heat on this. They're not going to allow this to happen in their in their homes, in their area where they live. One of the biggest events that will be coming up will be on Saturday, August 31st in Naples, Florida. Citizens turn up the heat in a march to Governor Rick Scott's home to stop the expansion of oil drilling in South Florida. Collier Resources owns 800,000 acres of mineral rights and is a major player in the resurgence of Florida oil drilling. Collier recently leased 115,000 acres for oil exploration to Dan A. Hughes, who early in May applied for state permits to set up an industrial drilling operation in Golden Gate Estates. The proposed site is only 1,000 feet from family homes and adjacent to the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge and to the whole western Everglades area. Although it's legal, it in no way should it be. New oil drilling will contribute to environmentally damaging climate change, as well as endanger residents, water, wetlands, and wildlife. Citizens are calling on Collier to live up to its century-old reputation as stewards of the land and step back from new oil drilling. Collier claims drilling can be done in an environmentally sensitive fashion, but nothing is environmentally friendly about placing families in an emergency evacuation zone next to a hazardous, unsightly, large-scale industrial drill site with an injection well and a 5-acre cement pad and a 145-foot oil rig. So, and even more, there's more to this environmentally. It's surrounded east, west, south, and north by a vast array of wetlands. These public lands acquired at great cost protect native and often rare plants and animals, as well as safeguard vital watersheds. Consider the Everglades National Park directly downstream from this site. Congress authorized a 30-year Everglades restoration plan. Why allow oil drilling to endanger that $10 billion project dedicated solely to restoring the South Florida ecosystem? So there is so much involved in this. Please, 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 please go to preserveourparadise.org. You can get all the information about their fight so far, the past events, the town hall meetings. This particular event that this press release went out about is a march to Governor Rick Scott's home to stop expansion of oil drilling in South Florida. Anybody can get involved, concerned residents, citizens, Preserve Our Paradise, people, Golden Gate, that whole housing division. We're meeting on the beach at the Naples Fishing Pier, 25th and 12th Avenue South, Naples, Florida. The zip for your GPS is 34012. The march is going to be on the beach to 3150 Gordon Drive in Old Naples, Gulf of Mexico beachfront property. This will be Saturday, August 31st from 7 to 9. Nice cool evening right on the beach. Should get some beach breezes. It will not be too hot, so I think the timing is perfect.
Visuals will be signs, new banners, flags, armbands, kayaks, bamboo. Oil well will be an artist display. Red tags, red armbands would be good too. And candles, because this will be a vigil. So definitely want to make it a visual thing. So more information, I will definitely be posting a link on again at Wise Women Media on the blog post for tonight's show. I'll post Preserve Our Paradise link. You should be able to find the press release right on the Preserve Our Paradise website. For more information, you can contact Karen Dwyer. Her email is dwyerka@gmail.com, or you can connect with all the people working on this on the Facebook page, Preserve Our Paradise, and you can post your questions there. Please get involved. If Floridians allow this to happen in one area, very soon it'll be happening in all of our areas. We need to stop it before it starts. So I would encourage everybody to get on board with this. Let's see. I've got another song, or I did have another song. Since we're getting to the end of the show, I want to encourage people to check us out, wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Hit us up on the GoFundMe link to contribute so we can keep bringing you shows every week. And I want to thank you for listening in tonight. Thanks to our sponsors and to everyone who listens. This show belongs to you, so anytime you want to make it your platform, give us a call or send us an email. You can send me an email personally at Anita Stewart, AnitaStewart, @gmail.com. Okay, we got another song to basically take us on out of here. Same time, same place next week. This is Heat Wave by Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.